American Road Trip Talk begins after this message.
You know his vision of America, but do you know his name? One of the most highly respected artists of America's Great Depression era, John Stuart Curry, defined the country's perceptions of the American Midwest. His painting, Tornado Over Kansas, is still one of the most iconic images in U.S. pop culture today. For the first time in a quarter century, Curry's masterworks will be exhibited under one roof. Visit the Muskegon Museum of Art in Michigan this summer to see John Stuart Curry, Weathering the Storm, an exhibition of life, art, and the American Midwest. To learn more, visit MuskegonArtMuseum.org/Curry. The horizon is wide and the highway is calling. That means it's time for another episode of American Road Trip Talk. I'm your host, Gary Mance, with a welcome and an invitation to travel the byways and back roads of yesteryear, searching for America in every incomparable mile. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you along for the ride. Glad to be working alongside Nathan Miller, our producer. This is American Road Trip Talk. We'll be back with the interview right after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I want to bring attention to a life-saving product called Alert Drops. Drowsy driving is one of the most catastrophic problems in America, and Alert Drops will stop it. What is Alert Drops? Alert Drops is a simple spray on the tongue made out of citric acid, sour lemon, and water. A simple spray on the tongue, nothing in your system, and you're naturally awake, naturally alert. Go to alertdrops.com. Very important. Go to alertdrops.com and stay safe.
American Road Magazine would like to thank Ranker.com, EnjoyTravelLife.com, and TravelersPress.com for honoring us with excellent ratings on their recent lists of outstanding travel magazines. American Road was listed among the top 25 travel magazines in 2024 by Ranker, by Travelers Press in the top 25 travel magazines 2024, one of only three in that group that are dedicated to travel in the USA. And Enjoy Travel Life rated American Road Magazine as number one in the best specialty magazines for travelers 2024 category. To say the least, we are grateful.
Wherever you go, Alternative Talk 1150 is here for you.
Today, Erica Nelson is back. And she joins us to recount a two-day pop-up art show in May of 2023 at TP Junction in Lawrence, Kansas. The purpose of the event was to examine caricatures of people in our roadside attractions and what they might mean to the traveling public. Welcome once again, Erica Nelson.
Thanks for having me back. Good to see everybody.
Erica, I'm telling you, this is a meaningful dialogue we are about to have, because I believe the title of this two-day event was Inappropriation at TP Junction.
Yes. Yes.
Well, please tell us, we know we only have so much time, but go ahead and give us a survey and who was involved. We sure know that you were, and the significance of the event to the public.
Yeah, we had a pop-up show during National Travel and Tourism Week. So it was all about these roadside attractions, these monuments that we've built for ourselves. But who are we? Who are the traveling public? And what do these monuments mean to people who might not feel like they're represented fairly? So there's one of those great, lovely old concrete teepees in Lawrence, Kansas, called TP Junction. Very much designed like the wigwam villages that you might see in Cave City, Kentucky, or Rialto, California. And we got to rent that out and put in an art show with three invited artists, Armando Minerez, Mona Cliff, and myself. And we all responded to some sort of roadside attraction that depicted something about us that didn't quite set right. So for me, it was growing up in the Ozarks, and one of the iconic monuments there is called the Hillbilly Halfwit. So it's this big muffler man hillbilly that's sort of buck-toothed and a little bumbly. Armando responded to La Salsa Man in Dodge City, which is another muffler man form that's depicting a Mexican-American as a servant sort of form. And then Mona Cliff responded to Tepe Junction itself. Her being a part, her husband's Osage, she went to Haskell Indian Nations University. So she seemed to be the most appropriate person to respond to this pop-up show inside a concrete teepee that's been used since the 1930s as a tourist stop.
A two-day event, and it seems that based on your conception of it, it's designed to spark dialogue, a public conversation about what it means to have, not just to appropriate cultural icons or symbols, but the inappropriation of them.
Yeah, because sometimes we don't understand maybe what we've done. And it takes somebody pointing it out for us to finally hear it. And I know this could be couched very easily in woke propaganda or cancel culture, but I knew that that would be one of the problems getting people in the door when we started. So the point was to have a very sort of soft landing for what are important issues. So everybody, as part of this exhibition, wanted to talk about this in a healthy, productive way, not as a, hey, you've been doing this wrong and I'm mad. So it helped having snarky twits, who all artists are, that are also very careful about how you frame a conversation. So it was really this sort of joyful celebration of these things while also pointing out, you know, this is where the concept lies and maybe we need to change that direction or change that core concept and not destroy any of these monuments, but change the way that they're viewed.
You know, I should ask you, because not everyone will be aware, what do you mean by the phrase or term muffler man?
It's sort of a bulk term used to reference some large fiberglass beings that were popular in the 1960s, 1970s, often muscular guys who you could sort of change what they were wearing or you could change their skin tone just a little bit. It was like the Barbie doll of the road, often found at tourist traps or muffler stations or anywhere that you'd need a big Paul Bunyan. You could order a muffler man, stick an axe in his hand and paint his shirt red, and you have a larger than life Paul Bunyan for whatever roadside attraction that you are promoting. So I do really like the idea of them as the Barbie dolls of the American road, because they were very changeable and you could order parts and pieces so you could assemble them a certain set of ways.
Let's move on, Erica, to the artworks themselves.
Yeah.
We can start with yours.
Oh, yeah, we can start with mine too. So mine was referencing the Hillbilly Halfwit Muffler Man. At Lake of the Ozarks, it has been recently restored but not re-erected. So there's, I'm sure, a much longer conversation you could have with, oh, Joel of American Giants. You should have him on at some point to talk about the American Giants Museum. Anyway, that's a side note. Mine was referencing this giant hillbilly. So I created a 10-foot by 10-foot hillbilly head that you could crawl into, kind of like a mental little, not little shop of horrors, but the little tunnels that you used to go to in sideshows. Or it was at really low to the ground. So it referenced for me the caves that I used to explore whenever I was little growing up in the Ozarks of Missouri. So you crawl into this hillbilly head and inside you see all of these sort of references that I have to what it means to be a hillbilly, what hillbillies are depicted like in popular culture, and how that jives or doesn't jive with the actual growing up in that culture. And what parts have I rejected? What part have I accepted? And what parts am I still grappling with personally?
So you're not all just like the Clampets?
No, we're not. Well, sometimes we have, like, we buy new shoes. We can talk good English. We don't marry in a straight line. So, yeah, and that's exactly the heart of what each of these artists were really responding to. And I felt like it was important to involve artists that could speak to what it means to them. I can only talk about the hillbilly part of it because that's where I grew up and that was my cultural identity. So Armando Menérez grew up in Mexico, but then also moved to rural Kansas whenever he was in his teens. And he grew up not far from Dodge City, which is very Western culture. So he was responding to this muffler man in Dodge City now that has a sombrero and a serape and a serving tray that has a beer on it and a thing of chips. So he was thinking about what does it, where does tourism and Mexican culture include him or where does it exclude him? So his artwork was really pretty fun. He took mold of his own face and decided to make his own Mexican souvenirs. So it's not the lazy Mexican leaning against the cactus, which we talked about for a long time in developing the concept, but he made planters of his own face. But he tinted the skin tones slightly differently each and every time, or there's a series of mustaches that you could hang on his nose. So some would be these really long, wild ones, some would be little, tiny, short ones. And on the bottom of each planter, the goal was to find the Mexican. So he would label each skin tone of what that could have been. Is this a Peruvian planter? Is this a Mexican planter? Was this a Colombian planter? But the joke was, it was all Armando's face. It was all Armando's creation. So he's kind of pointing at that absurdity of assuming that you know something just by looking, or assuming that you could tell a nationality by a skin tone. So that too was nothing I ever would have come up with. But in talking about, again, that underlying concept of who are these tourist attractions for? What are they selling to you? What images are they selling to you? And how would that change if somebody else was selling you an image?
And tell us about Mona.
Mona's was just so great because a little bit about Tepe Junction. It is still used as a party hall, and Lawrence, Kansas is home to Haskell Indian Nations University. So Mona Cliff was from Montana originally, but she ended up coming to Lawrence, Kansas to go to Haskell, and she knew Tepe Junction as, oh, that's the party place. So whenever there was a Haskell party, it would happen out at Tepe Junction. So when I asked her to be a part of it, she was like, oh man, I haven't thought about that place since college. And we walk over, we go meet at Tepe Junction, open the doors, and this smell of beer and old college party place just hits both of us like this wave. And she was just like, oh, this takes me back to those confusing times where you're trying to find yourself. And she wrote a really great article about that conflict between knowing what a place is like to you and knowing that it looks like something else to someone else. So for her, this teepee, the concrete teepee represented a part of Haskell Indian Nations University. But then as a person, her family does use teepees for their ceremonies. So she brought one of her own personal teepees and erected a real teepee inside this concrete teepee that was still in this weird muddle of her own life experiences. But her current contemporary teepee is painted with contemporary art designs. So for her, it was this great meeting point where she could have these conversations of being connected and disconnected at the same time in this weird intersection of places.
We are talking with Erica Nelson, an independent artist and educator exploring contemporary art forms in the public realm. Erica's work manifests itself in a series of interesting innovative, engaging public art projects that incorporate art into the everyman's everyday experience. She centers her wanderings in her adopted home community of rural Lucas, Kansas. Erica, how did you get this project off the ground? Were you the person who was the main driver behind this? And there had to be a question of where do you get the funding?
Yeah, and one of the difficulties of being an artist is where do you put your time and focus? And I don't make paintings for sale commercially. I focus on these larger sort of idea-based projects that you have to pitch to somebody and say, and convince them, hey, this is a great idea. This could have some impact. Would you help me pull it off? So I'd been kicking this idea around for 3 to 4 years. And finally, there is a funding opportunity that they ask you for a project. There's a decent budget to actually pull it off. So I finally got to write this idea out and ask some collaborators to do it with me. And the project was accepted by Mid-America Arts Alliance for funding as part of their Artist Innovation Series. And without that, we couldn't have done it because you do have to rent the facility. You pay the artist. And even more than the exhibition and the ideas, we also printed a zine afterwards that got those main ideas out there and some critical responses to it that we then stuffed into free newspaper machines across the state. So that all does take actual money. So without the support of Mid-America Arts Alliance and a lot of volunteer time on the part of our artists and World's Largest Things Incorporated chipping in the machines and some of the printing, that's what it took to really get it off the ground. But they all start as these, you know what would be fun ideas in my head that I then put down on paper and somebody else agrees, yeah, that'd be fun. Let's do that. Or impactful and fun. Let's do that.
What were some of the responses you got? I take it that you must have heard quite a bit from various artists.
One of the best results was people who'd always wanted to see the inside of TP Junction with the lights on. Because it has been a party spot for colleges, which means that the lights are usually very, very dim. You don't really want to see what's going on in the corners. Yeah. So we played that up somewhat. But people who would never be in that situation or comfortable going to a bar felt like, hey, we can go see what's inside TP Junction and maybe look at the art, maybe not. So there was some of that. There were some Haskell students who came by because they knew Mona. Her husband teaches at the college. So we got to hear firsthand what some of the parties were like, even the weekend before, because it's still an active rented space. I did get a very good friend who knows that he can ask me difficult questions. His question was, do you want these things to go away? And I didn't remember that the idea might have started in that negative way, because at that point we were all in this sort of joyous celebration of idea making, that it did originate in a difficult place and I needed to address that too. And my answer to him was, no, I don't want these to go away, but I think we need to use them to have these conversations instead of just assume that, yeah, we can just use these images or these caricatures of people without having any consequences. So those were some of the sort of realms of interactions that started with that. And afterwards, there's been this sort of ripple effect. I've seen the idea come up again and again in all of our works that were involved in that. And even being able to talk to you a year later, it does have this ripple effect of creating good conversations goes so much farther and has so much more power than stopping a conversation with a couple of sentences that are pointed.
You know, Erica, people who go, and I've done my, maybe not quite my share, I should do more. I want to get out more and see these roadside attractions from coast to coast, if at all possible. I think of roadside attractions as inspiring a feeling of nostalgia. And then there's the element of kitsch. What role do they play in this built environment where you can go to this place or that place and you see things? And I imagine the perception differs with the individual.
Yeah, that is a very good point, in that because if we become really familiar with things, we stop seeing them until you're asked to see them again. And Mona talked a little bit about all of the road trips that she used to do from the North Coast up over, usually along the top border, so the Dakotas and Montana and Minnesota, road trips with her family. And she would stop in a truck stop, and she would see these really kitschy souvenirs, but sometimes they were also displayed with alongside an actual artifact that meant something very important to somebody's family. She said that that difficulty of having those things together and knowing that somebody else is viewing them as just the same thing made her skin grow a little thicker to the cartooning of her culture. But she didn't say that it went away. It was just something that you start forgetting about. And I think that's where nostalgia comes in too. Nostalgia depends so much on focusing on the good feeling or that good little kernel of a memory and kind of glossing over the parts that weren't so great about 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 10 years ago, or the nostalgia that we're creating now. So being able to go back and address some of those things that have been glossed over through nostalgia while we're still celebrating the good parts too. Like, we don't want to take those kernels out, but you do need to remember that this is glossy. This is the Vaseline on the lens of looking backwards that kind of fuzzes out the sharp points. And those sharp points are still there and still need to be talked about.
And I guess I should mention the, it's just something that pops up, speaking of pop-up, it pops up in my head. Whenever I see the word curios, I can't help, Erica, but think curios equals mass-produced junk and maybe not produced in the United States, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So what if you were traveling in another country and suddenly there's this American curio stand and something that you feel very involved in is suddenly dumbed down to this little piece of plastic that somebody will buy on a whim and throw away the next day. It sort of diminishes your identity in that tiny little bit. But curio is also part of that curiosity. So I do celebrate the curiosity. And if we could get curios and curiosity back together, where it's not something throwaway, but it's something that can spark deeper learning, I think we've got this opportunity for tourist attractions and roadside attractions and curio shops to have a deeper meaning for everybody. I think people are looking for that now, in addition to looking for places that aren't like anywhere else.
That was beautifully said, Erica. Thank you for that. This is an important public discussion, and I hope the conversation will continue nationwide about cultural identity, appropriation, inappropriation, and what is appropriate. Eye of the beholder, yes, but that's what makes for important conversations.
Thanks for having it with me, too. And just remembering that we're always looking, we're always experiencing, and we also have the power to talk about things in a respectful manner, even if it's sticky and pointy.
And before we close, Erica Nelson, tell us about World's Largest Things. What do you have going on right now?
Oh, well, our season opener is April 1st. So right now, I am taking that giant hillbilly head that I built for Interappropriation and trying to figure out where it's going to land in the expo so that during the 2024 season, April 1st to October 31st, that big giant hillbilly head will be a part of the Roadside Sideshow Expo.
You go, Erica. Erica Nelson, always a joy. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to American Road Trip Talk. Along with Thomas and Becky Repp, co-founders of American Road Magazine, we remind you to visit our website, AmericanRoadMagazine.com, to preview the current issue. Until next time, dream well and drive safely on the American Road.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I'm so excited to tell you about American Road. It is the best car travel magazine in the world. They have the most fantastic adventures detailed in each magazine with all your itinerary. We could just jump in the car with your family and have the most fabulous adventures you've ever had in your life. Please get a copy of American Road and start your own adventure.